This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Melinda Penkava in Washington. Neil Conan is away. As the U.S. gears up for war with Iraq, it is facing resistance from some European countries it had counted on as allies. France and Germany, which oppose a U.S.-led war in Iraq, are pushing instead to give U.N. weapons inspectors more time. Russian President Vladimir Putin joined their call for toughened inspections today after he had a meeting in Paris. And Belgium today joined with France and Germany to veto a NATO plan to bolster Turkey's defenses to protect it from possible Iraqi attacks. The three countries said they didn't have a quarrel with helping Turkey, but that to build up its defenses now was tantamount to accepting that there would be a war. In the past week, 16 other members of NATO signed on as supporting the U.S. position on Iraq. The U.S. ambassador to NATO, Nicholas Burns, says that NATO is now facing a crisis of credibility. So the question becomes, how is that transatlantic alliance shifting? Is the future of NATO on the line? Who's with the U.S. and who's against the U.S. as the military buildup in the Gulf continues? And practically speaking, what will it mean for the U.S. during a war and after one? Call us with your questions or comments. Our number here in Washington is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. The email address, as always, is totn@npr.org. Joining us now from his office in Brussels, Belgium, is Ian Black. He is the European editor of The Guardian newspaper. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi there. Well, Ian Black, recap for us, if you could, the positions of Germany and France over this rather busy weekend, these past few days.
Well, what's happened is that for nearly a month now, NATO 19 members have been discussing a request initially from the U.S., but backed by the NATO machinery, by George Robertson, the British Secretary General, which says Turkey, a member of the alliance, a neighbor of Iraq, could be threatened in a possible war by Saddam Hussein. This is a military alliance where members look out for each other. What they want to do, they say, is to take prudent defensive measures to prepare in the case that Turkey is attacked. This has been discussed quietly, been discussed more formally in the last couple of weeks. Last week, Lord Robertson decided that the time had come to bring this to a head, and he announced that unless there were formal objections, the planning for this deployment of Patriot missiles and AWACS surveillance planes would begin today. Early this morning, the three governments, France, Germany, and Belgium, said that they had strong objections to this, and the row basically has been going on all day, and there is a sense, quite an alarming sense for some people, that this alliance, which sat out the Cold War and won it, is now in a very deep crisis because of Iraq.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the other development is that Germany and France were saying that they wanted to have more extensive inspections, and Russia weighed in on this a little bit today, too.
Well, what we have from the point of view of the United States and Britain, which is more or less supporting the United States so far, is a situation where they feel that Germany and France, backed now by Russia, are seeking to buy time to go back to the UN Security Council and to have a situation where more inspections take place in Iraq, larger numbers of inspectors, perhaps surveillance flights, to prolong the search, if you like, for a peaceful solution. And they feel that in NATO, which is a military alliance, not, as one diplomat put it, a debating society like the UN, in NATO there are obligations under international treaties to defend members. And that's the really rather angry approach we're hearing today from the Americans, from the British, and indeed many others. Because the truth is that at the moment we have, in this 19-member organization, three of them, two of them large and important countries, holding up what can only be agreed by the whole alliance, all 19 members acting together. So there's a sense, I think, from the Americans in particular, who are the largest and most important member of NATO, that the French and the Germans are playing games in NATO to pursue their goals at the United Nations.
Mm-hmm. Now, there was also a German proposal floated over the weekend for UN troops to go to Iraq. Anything more come of that?
It isn't clear quite what the status of this proposal is. I think what we've had is some confusion. The French certainly called last week, after Colin Powell's address to the Security Council, the French called then for to triple the number of inspectors to make the process more effective. Then over the weekend there was a report that France and Germany had come together with a new initiative which involved more inspectors and UN troops. But today, Jacques Chirac, the French president, has denied this. He said there is no plan to send in UN troops. What there clearly is, however, is from Paris and Berlin, a clear desire to avoid the sense that from America, I think in particular, now that war is now more or less inevitable. They are playing for time.
Mm-hmm. Of course, there have been disagreements within this alliance, within NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Alliance, for at other times in its history. But it does strike one that lately there's been the tenor of it, of that. There's been a tone that has been far from diplomatic.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, people here at NATO headquarters today have been talking about past crises in NATO. Of course, it's seen crises. It's an organization of sovereign states which came together in a form of collective defense at the height of the Cold War. They've had their problems. They rowed a lot in the 1960s about France's role in the alliance. They had serious disagreements in the 1980s over the question of deploying medium-range nuclear missiles, the Cruise and Pershing affair, and they argued a lot in the mid-1990s over Bosnia, where Europe and America had sharp disagreements. I think what's different now is the sense that America, NATO's most important and most powerful member, is without dispute the most unassailably powerful country on the planet. And faced with a crisis of epic proportions over Iraq after September the 11th, I think the European allies feel very, very sharply how wide the gap is between them and
This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Melinda Penkava in Washington. Neil Conan is away. As the U.S. gears up for war with Iraq, it is facing resistance from some European countries it had counted on as allies. France and Germany, which oppose a U.S.-led war in Iraq, are pushing instead to give U.N. weapons inspectors more time. Russian President Vladimir Putin joined their call for toughened inspections today after he had a meeting in Paris. And Belgium today joined with France and Germany to veto a NATO plan to bolster Turkey's defenses to protect it from possible Iraqi attacks. The three countries said they didn't have a quarrel with helping Turkey, but that to build up its defenses now was tantamount to accepting that there would be a war. In the past week, 16 other members of NATO signed on as supporting the U.S. position on Iraq. The U.S. ambassador to NATO, Nicholas Burns, says that NATO is now facing a crisis of credibility. So the question becomes, how is that transatlantic alliance shifting? Is the future of NATO on the line? Who's with the U.S. and who's against the U.S. as the military buildup in the Gulf continues? And practically speaking, what will it mean for the U.S. during a war and after one? Call us with your questions or comments. Our number here in Washington is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. The email address, as always, is totn@npr.org. Joining us now from his office in Brussels, Belgium, is Ian Black. He is the European editor of The Guardian newspaper. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi there. Well, Ian Black, recap for us, if you could, the positions of Germany and France over this rather busy weekend, these past few days.
Well, what's happened is that for nearly a month now, NATO 19 members have been discussing a request, initially from the U.S., but backed by the NATO machinery, by George Robertson, the British Secretary General, which says Turkey, a member of the alliance, a neighbor of Iraq, could be threatened in a possible war by Saddam Hussein. This is a military alliance where members look out for each other. What they want to do, they say, is to take prudent defensive measures to prepare, in the case that Turkey is attacked. This has been discussed quietly, been discussed more formally in the last couple of weeks. Last week, Lord Robertson decided that the time had come to bring this to a head, and he announced that unless there were formal objections, the planning for this deployment of Patriot missiles and AWACS surveillance planes would begin today. Early this morning, the three governments, France, Germany, and Belgium, said that they had strong objections to this, and the row basically has been going on all day, and there is a sense, quite an alarming sense for some people, that this alliance, which sat out the Cold War and won it, is now in a very deep crisis because of Iraq.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the other development is that Germany and France were saying that they wanted to have more extensive inspections, and Russia weighed in on this a little bit today, too.
Well, what we have from the point of view of the United States and Britain, which is more or less supporting the United States so far, is a situation where they feel that Germany and France, backed now by Russia, are seeking to buy time to go back to the UN Security Council and to have a situation where more inspections take place in Iraq, larger numbers of inspectors, perhaps surveillance flights, to prolong the search, if you like, for a peaceful solution. And they feel that in NATO, which is a military alliance, not, as one diplomat put it, a debating society like the UN, in NATO there are obligations under international treaties to defend members. And that's the really rather angry approach we're hearing today from the Americans, from the British, and indeed many others. Because the truth is that at the moment we have in this 19-member organization, three of them, two of them large and important countries, holding up what can only be agreed by the whole alliance, all 19 members acting together. So there's a sense, I think, from the Americans in particular, who are the largest and most important member of NATO, that the French and the Germans are playing games in NATO to pursue their goals at the United Nations.
Mm-hmm. Now, there was also a German proposal floated over the weekend for UN troops to go to Iraq. Anything more come of that?
It isn't clear quite what the status of this proposal is. I think what we've had is some confusion. The French certainly called last week, after Colin Powell's address to the Security Council, the French called then for to triple the number of inspectors to make the process more effective. Then over the weekend there was a report that France and Germany had come together with a new initiative which involved more inspectors and UN troops. But today, Jacques Chirac, the French president, has denied this. He said there is no plan to send in UN troops. What there clearly is, however, is from Paris and Berlin, a clear desire to avoid the sense that from America, I think in particular now, that war is now more or less inevitable. They are playing for time.
Mm-hmm. Of course, there have been disagreements within this alliance, within NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Alliance, at other times in its history. But it does strike one that lately there's been the tenor of it, of that. There's been a tone that has been far from diplomatic.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, people here at NATO headquarters today have been talking about past crises in NATO. And of course, it's seen crises. It's an organization of sovereign states which came together in a form of collective defense at the height of the Cold War. They've had their problems. They rowed a lot in the 1960s about France's role in the alliance. They had serious disagreements in the 1980s over the question of deploying medium-range nuclear missiles, the Cruise and Pershing affair. And they argued a lot in the mid-1990s over Bosnia, where Europe and America had sharp disagreements. I think what's different now is the sense that America, NATO's most important and most powerful member, is without dispute the most unassailably powerful country on the planet. And faced with a crisis of epic proportions over Iraq after September the 11th, I think the European allies feel very, very sharply how wide the gap is between them and America. We see it all the time. We see it in the public, the stand-up row almost that we saw in Germany yesterday between Donald Rumsfeld, the defense secretary, and Joschka Fischer, the German foreign minister. They behave not like allies, but enemies, or at least people who are spoiling for some kind of fight. So things are looking pretty grim, and the mood here at NATO's headquarters is fairly bleak today.
What, and one other question for you here. Why is Germany acting in this manner? Because France in the past has sometimes struck a rather independent course from NATO and has not wanted to go along with what the U.S. would have dictated in other years and said, no, we're independent, we're going to do it our way. But Germany has been a much more reliable ally. What has changed here that Germany now is very much in the forefront of opposing this U.S. action in Iraq and is taking the steps it has been taking within NATO?
Well, I think that's a very interesting question. It's one that's causing some puzzlement amongst the other allies. Certainly today here, there have been a lot of background briefings for journalists. There's no question that the villain of this piece, from an American perspective, from a British perspective, from the perspective of most of the other allies, it's France. It's Jacques Chirac, not Gerhard Schroeder. It was thought overnight that Germany would go along with this decision today to defend Turkey. And what seems to have happened is that the German defense minister and other ministers were preparing to do that, but they were blocked by the German Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder, who is being blamed quite widely for playing to the gallery of German public opinion, which is overwhelmingly against this war. The irony is, as people have been pointing out here at NATO all day, is that Germany really benefited very extensively from NATO's protection during the long years of the Cold War. And now, at this moment of crisis, it is going down a route that is tinged by pacifism, almost by principled opposition to war, even though it has to be said Germany has played a significant role in Afghanistan after the war there, and it has seemed in recent years to be overcoming its almost instinctive resistance for well-known historical reasons to the use of force. But this time, Chancellor Schroeder seems to have really read the Riot Act to his ministers, and he's not giving in. There's a sense, too, I think, in which Schroeder is seen as being somehow locked in to a move in which Jacques Chirac is the senior partner. Chancellor Schroeder is in difficulties at home. He lost some important elections just the other day. And Germany looks weak, but together with France, it somehow feels it can cut a better figure on the world stage, or at least on the European stage.
It's an alliance there. And we are talking about alliances this hour on Talk of the Nation. With us is Ian Black, the European editor of The Guardian newspaper. And also with us here in Washington is Ewald Dalder, who is the senior fellow in foreign policy studies at the Brookings Institution, and also the former director for European affairs at the National Security Council during the Clinton administration. Welcome, Ewald.
Glad to be here.
Well, you've been hearing this discussion, and I'm curious your take on this. How, in calculating their positions, France and Germany, do you think much thought was given by them to what this might do to NATO? Was that figure in the calculation at all?
It must have figured in the calculation. They knew what this would mean. They knew what the uproar that has now occurred would be. But I think it's important to step back a little bit. What they are really saying is, why is at this moment defense of Turkey an issue? It's not as if Turkey is being attacked or is under threat immediately and directly. It is, if it is attacked, because a war will be started by the United States at this point without UN mandate, without agreement by the French or the Germans, both of whom are on the UN Security Council. And it isn't clear that under those circumstances, we should not defend Turkey, as they said, but that one should prejudge the question of the war against Iraq, which will prejudge the question of the defense of Turkey. And because the issue is about Iraq, it's really not about NATO. It's really not about the Article 5 commitment of defending Turkey. It's about how does one deal with the threat that Iraq poses. The Germans and the French and the Belgians are at this point not prepared to go down the road that the United States has laid laid down. This is a decision by the United States to force the issue. It didn't have to be forced at this moment. It may be prudent planning to do so, and if I had been the Germans and the French, I would have voted for this, or at least not opposed it. But there you are. The issue here is a fundamental disagreement over Iraq that is now playing out within the institution that the Americans have put it in.
Mm-hmm. Ian Black, what's your take? If the U.S. were to begin a war with Iraq, would any of this change? Would Germany and France perhaps come back into the fold more, as the U.S. would like to see it? Let's point that out. Or would there continue to be this division within NATO?
I think that a lot of political credibility is being put on the line here. It's true, as Ivo Dolder says, that ostensibly the French and the German and the Belgian objections are about timing. They say, in principle, of course, we are committed to supporting an ally, but we don't want to send the wrong signal at the wrong time. We don't want to prejudge the outcome of this crisis, which, of course, to them looks like, as it does to most other people, inevitably a war against Saddam Hussein. I think that it will be very hard for Germany in particular to in any way be involved in or support a military outcome to this crisis, unless in some extraordinary way the UN process produces such clear and unequivocal evidence, the smoking gun, if you like, that it has full legitimacy according to the most stringent possible criteria, if you like. I think the French are in a different position. For all the irritation that they've caused, we've seen the French positioning themselves in a way that, if circumstances go the right way, they could take part. The other day, they announced very publicly that their aircraft carrier, a very modern vessel, was steaming off towards the Gulf. Very much the pattern that we saw last time this region.
Well, Ian Black, thank you for joining us. Ian Black is European editor of The Guardian newspaper. When we return, we'll talk more about NATO with Ivo Dolder, and we'll take your calls 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Melinda Penkava in Washington, and today we're talking about the role of NATO in the build-up to a possible war with Iraq, and what role NATO is playing today, and how it has changed since the end of the Cold War. We're looking also at whether NATO is still relevant as an alliance, and we welcome your calls and comments. Numbers 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK, the email address totn@npr.org. With us is Ivo Dolder, who is Senior Fellow in Foreign Policy Studies at the Brookings Institution, and he was Director for European Affairs at the National Security Council under President Clinton. Welcome again, Ivo.
Great to be here.
Well, the veto vote by France, Germany, and Belgium today, saying that NATO should not be helping to reinforce Turkey as a precursor to a war with Iraq. How unusual is that to you, that should come up?
It's extraordinarily unusual. It's not happened terribly often, certainly not in this direct manner. The procedure within NATO, if there is disagreement, is that one tries to forge a consensus. And in fact, over the last 3 to 4 weeks within the North Atlantic Council, they have tried to forge that consensus. And at some point, somebody has to decide whether to go forward or not. That happened last week when the Secretary General, Lord Robertson, said, we will go ahead unless somebody says no. This is a common procedure in NATO. It's called the silence procedure. It allows people to save face. There isn't a positive vote. Mm-hmm. Nobody's on record as saying that this is going ahead. It's just that this will happen unless people oppose it. Usually when that happens, except for technical reasons, the process just continues. But in this case, it was a veto. It was very public. And we now have the crisis right here in front of us.
So the silent treatment in the past would have been what passed for disagreement, but the alliance hung together. But now we have it very much, as you say, on record that these three countries, two of them rather big players in NATO, we should point out, are on record vetoing something that the U.S. very strongly wanted.
Exactly, and it's a major veto. It basically is a disapproval of American policy. Not surprising, after all. We are in the middle of a debate about how to deal with Iraq, about whether to give it more time to find out if there is a way to resolve this issue peacefully or whether we have to go to war. There is deep distrust between the Europeans and the Americans, particularly between France and Germany on the one side and the United States on the others. We have vitriolic language being thrown back and forth between senior administration officials and senior foreign ministers. It's all pretty ugly. It's not what one expects to see in an alliance. And I think, as Ian Black said a little earlier, when you have the foreign minister of Germany and the secretary of defense of the United States go at each other in the way they did over the weekend, you know that something pretty major is happening.
Indeed. And let's go to the phones now. Denise is in Kansas City. Hello, Denise. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Yeah, I just had a comment, too, and I've been listening to this. It's a very interesting conversation. And the whole situation is obviously very interesting at this point in time. And my comment is this, that, you know, it is truly supposed to be an alliance. And it seems that the United States is trying to drive all the policy currently in NATO. And you have to wonder if this type of behavior continues, if the future of NATO continue to be viable, not on the account of the Iraqi situation, but overall, an alliance is to be, it should be a consensus. And obviously, there has been a lot of, there's a lot of distrust, and I don't see a consensus on the part of the United States here or willingness to work towards consensus on Iraq at all, and currently with this situation. So you have to wonder what's going to happen, too, in the future if this type of behavior continues.
Ivo Dalder?
I think that's right on the money. Back the day after September 11, the attack occurred, the 19 countries of NATO declared that that attack was an attack on the alliance, that for the first time in the history of that alliance, in the 52 years it existed, NATO invoked what it called its Article 5 commitment, an attack against one is an attack against all. And after having done that, the United States basically turned its back on NATO. It said, we don't particularly want your assistance. When the Allies came up with troops, with ships, with airplanes, it was cherry-picked. We'll take you, but we won't take you. We'll take the Brits, but we won't take the French. We won't take the Germans. Under those circumstances, the alliance was devalued. It's also noteworthy, you know, with regard to Iraq, what the administration has done is it has gone to NATO in order to find a way to protect Turkey should the fallout of a war in Iraq spill over into Turkey. But it has not gone to NATO in order to make that a military mission against Iraq. In fact, 6 months ago when the Secretary of Defense traveled to Warsaw for a NATO meeting and asked, what role do you think NATO should have in a potential conflict with Iraq? His answer was, it hasn't frankly crossed my mind. So under those circumstances, when you don't think this alliance as an alliance is important, it shouldn't be too surprising that some of the allies at some point say, enough is enough, we've had it with this kind of behavior, and we're going to oppose you on this particular issue at this time.
Mm-hmm. And we go to Robert in Burlingame, California. Welcome, Robert.
Hi, yes. My comment is that it's interesting to me, I was born in the mid-40s, that after 60 years of America having to basically unilaterally stand up against the Soviet Union in the Cold War, that at a time of great stress, the alliance falls apart when it's been very convenient for the alliance to utilize the services, the military services and economic services, for 60 years. And now, at this particular time, it seems like, well, we'll go along our own way, and that's bizarre to me and actually astounds me and a lot of Americans, I'm sure. I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, thanks for your call, Robert.
There's no doubt that what the United States has done for Western Europe, and in particular for Germany, frankly, is an incredible degree of support, of sacrifice, starting with, of course, World War II. Actually, World War I, if you want to go back that far, in order to defeat the kind of atrocious regimes that were running Germany at the time, then rebuilding Germany through the Marshall Pact and providing the security through NATO. All of that is true, and all of that means that, in fact, the importance of this alliance is central to not only the Europeans but the Americans. The question is, when there are fundamental disagreements about policy, whether on those terms we just expect others to follow us, or whether we can say, you know, on this one we just disagree. If the debate on Iraq had been pursued among a slightly more adult level than it has up to this point, I don't have any doubt that the Germans, as they did in 1991, would have said, listen, we understand that there's a possibility that something may happen with Turkey. We're more than happy to see the planning go ahead. We're even happy to have AWACS planes go over and support it. But you have to understand that what has happened in the past 6 months, perhaps 18 months, in this alliance is a degree of distrust, a degree of quite extraordinary fighting over not just the issue of Iraq, but the issue of American power, about how one deals with allies, about how one deals with the questions of international order. This is a country in the United States that over the past 18 months has walked out of numerous international organizations, out of numerous international treaties, and has done so unilaterally. Now we're getting a taste of our own medicine.
In your estimation, is it a question of tone? If this were, and this may be, I don't know if I should ask you this because you were in the Clinton administration, but if it were the Clinton administration trying to bring out this type of policy in Iraq, go to war with Iraq, would the European nations be reacting as they are, the France and Germany? Is this a question of personality with the leaders in this administration?
It is in part a question of personality. In part, it is a structural issue. We just don't need each other in the same way as we did during the after the Second World War and during the Cold War. And we're each going our own ways. And there were many, many differences between the Clinton administration and the Europeans. Mr. Clinton was extraordinarily adept at biting his left lip and saying, "I'm really, really sorry. I wish I could be with you," but then go his own way. The administration for which I work was talked multilateral talk, but walked a unilateral walk. This one does it the other way around. It's a administration that is proud of its own point of view. It insists on that point of view being right, and frankly doesn't really care whether anybody else supports it or not, because it believes in some sense has the power to do as it must. Personalities aggravate the underlying differences that exist to a point where if you have a Secretary of Defense comparing one of the great allies that we have in Europe, Germany, to Cuba and Libya, as Mr. Rumsfeld did last week, that is a degree of vitriol, a degree of going off the track that is very difficult under those circumstances to say, listen, we have to build this alliance.
Mm-hmm. We're going to go now to Germany, actually. Dean is on the line in Frankfurt. Hi there, Dean. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hey, thanks. I just wanted to say a couple of things. I'm amazed at how little background information about Misters Schroeder and Fisher is reported in the press. These people have they built their whole careers on anti-Americanism and anti-NATO feeling during the whole 70s and 80s, and simply what we're seeing now, they're living out their fantasies from a quarter of a century ago in their attacks and all of this. I mean, it's totally ridiculous. Nobody knows that Schroeder was the head of the Young Socialists during the 70s. You don't get in that position by being pro-American. He was avidly anti-American, ditto for Fisher. And
Fisher has had to see their background
in this. And,
right.
And what one of the gentlemen said about if Schroeder would go along with a war, the evidence was there against Iraq, etc. There's no way. He has repeated since last August, every chance he got, it does not matter what is presented in the UN, he will be 100% opposed to any military action. You could find an atom
bomb Dean, I have a question.
Under Saddam's bed,
Dean,
he would still oppose
Dean,
it.
Dean, I have a question. You're there in Germany. How is that resonating, though, with the public there? Is he reflecting the public sentiment in Germany?
Well, I personally think, one of your guests also said that it was France who started this whole thing. I have to disagree. I think Schroeder started the whole thing during the election campaign, mm-hmm. And there's no way he can go back on this. If he budges one bit back and shows any support whatsoever for the American position, his coalition will fall apart in a couple of hours.
Well, Ivo Dalder is nodding his head on one of those points there.
I agree that there's no doubt that it was Schroeder who used during his election campaign in late August and early September turned quite dramatically against American policy with regard to Iraq, and that in some sense France's position, which is still more modulated than the Germans. The German position is we will not under any circumstances mm-hmm. participate in war. The French have said that force is in fact still an option. And in that sense, the Germans have led. I do want to disagree, though, with Dean on the question of whether these two gentlemen, Mr. Fisher, the foreign minister, and Chancellor Schroeder, are reflecting their old anti-American roots here. This is an administration that came in 1998 and immediately supported NATO and the United States on the issue of Kosovo, It participated in that war. It has deployed more troops into the Balkans than any other German government. And indeed, it is now leading the effort in Afghanistan to stabilize that country in the aftermath of the war that we had there. Even to the point that as little as a week ago, a couple of weeks ago, the Germans had more foreign troops supporting U.S. Policy and indeed German policy than any other country except for the United States abroad. That is a significant degree of support. It is very different than the kind of anti-Americanism, or let alone the kind of policies that Cuba and Libya have been pursuing with regard to U.S. interests. And it is important that it was this administration was able to do that.
Right, and we should point out that Fisher, Joschka Fischer, has not in recent years at least had this reputation of being anti-American. I mean, that's what was rather striking about the position that he took.
Right.
Whatever might have happened in his youth.
In fact, quite to the contrary, during the election campaign, Fischer was the most pro-American in his statements. The importance of what America, and as the previous caller, Robert from California, mentioned, Fischer went out of his way to underscore continuously that the United States is a great ally, has done much for Germany. And we just have a disagreement on the question of how one goes to war or whether one goes to war over resolving the issue of Iraq. That is a legitimate disagreement.
1-800-989-8255. 1-800-989-TALK is our number. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And we, if you want to join us, that's the number to call. And Peggy has done it. Peggy's in Olympia, Washington. Hi, Peggy.
Hi. I have a question, and I hope this doesn't seem to be too naive. But there's sort of a curious disconnect for me when it's... When we talk about governments who are supporting U.S. policy, rarely do I hear it mentioned that their populations are very much opposed to U.S. policies for attacking Iraq. I mean, sometimes I hear reports on massive peace demonstrations in various countries like Spain, Italy, England, and Turkey, for that matter. And I hear things over, I read things on the internet and so forth. But it's rarely mentioned when people are talking about that a particular country's policy in the corridors of power vis-a-vis U.S. policy or their orientation within NATO. Now, I wonder, what role does public opinion play? Is it just assumed that public opinion is not a factor in any of this? Because it all seems to be about politics on this massive governmental level and how this is playing out within NATO. But what about public opinion? To me, it's curious that these countries whose governments are supporting the U.S. are, as far as I know, at least the major countries, are. That's not reflected within public opinion. I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, thanks for your call,
Thank
Peggy.
You.
Ivo Dalder?
Peggy's exactly right. There is a widespread consensus among all European publics. There's very little variation, no matter what the governments of those particular countries say, with regard to the question of Iraq. No one is in support of this war. And when the question is whether the United States or somebody should go alone without a UN mandate, we're talking about 75% to 80% of the European population, whether it's French, Italian, Spanish, British, Polish or Estonian, that is against this war. In fact, we have a divided country even here on this issue.
Why are the governments in those places?
In some cases, as indeed in Great Britain, where Tony Blair believes in strongly that it is necessary to deal with the issue of weapons of mass destruction and Saddam Hussein at this time, if necessary, through war. In most other cases, it is about making fealty to the United States, being part of, it's part of the alliance in the way that one of our previous callers said it should be. It is a degree that one needs to support the United States. In some countries, including those from Eastern Europe who are awaiting ratification of their entry into NATO, this is not a good time to convince the U.S. Senate that they're anti-U.S. on the issue of Iraq. So it's not surprising that they're going to.
The freedom of expression is probably not wisely instituted at that time.
Exactly.
So that's what's in it for the countries that are awaiting entry into NATO.
And there are some countries, frankly.
And what about the others that are in already? What's in it for them?
They believe that at some point you have to choose. Mm-hmm. And it's very clear which way the United States has chosen. So you can do one of two things. You can oppose the United States and have the kind of debate that is going on, or in the end you can say the inevitable is going to happen, and what do we gain by opposing something that is going to happen in any case other than anger by the United States? That's not a smart policy. So mm-hmm. they support it.
Mm-hmm. Does Europe still need NATO?
Well, this is a question we've been debating now for about 10-plus years. NATO was an organization that was built because the Europeans wanted American protection in the case of a Soviet intimidation or an attack. Of course, the Soviet Union is no more. Russia now has a special relationship with NATO. And at least for that purpose, NATO is no longer necessary. Is there another purpose for which we can have it? Yes, it could stabilize major parts of Eastern Europe, like the Balkans, or indeed it could deal with questions outside of Europe. But whether NATO, as a diktat by the American president, is still needed is something we're debating right now and finding out.
And we will debate this just a little longer when we come back from a quick break. We'll talk more with Ivo Dalder and take your calls, 1-800-989-8255. I'm Melinda Penkava. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Welcome back to Talk of the Nation. I'm Melinda Penkava, in for Neil Conan, and we are talking about the U.S. and its relationship with NATO as there is the buildup for war with Iraq, at least from the U.S. perspective, but among some of the larger NATO countries. There is resistance to that, and we're talking this hour with Ivo Dalder, Senior Fellow in Foreign Policy Studies at the Brookings Institution, and who also served as Director of European Affairs at the NSC, National Security Council, under President Clinton. And we welcome your calls. Our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Let's go right now to Mahan, who's in Anaheim, California. Welcome, Mahan.
Yeah, hello, Melinda. Thank you. Just wanted to make a comment here. As an Iraqi American, I really see nothing for us as Iraqis in the German-French plan. There's no talk about human rights violations. There's no talks about dictatorship, about freedom, about democracy. And we think that that is an integral part of this conflict. To the French and the German, peace is the absence of war. And I got to challenge them on this issue. Iraq today is living in a state of war. Iraq is losing at least 1,000 of its innocent citizens to the brutality of Saddam Hussein every single year. Now, to me, this is a state of war that needs to be stopped. And I know Germany and France want to pick a fight with the U.S., but believe me, they picked the worst condition. If you could beat the U.S. in this battle, there's nothing in Saddam's camp that you could brag about. And I just wanted to bring this issue to the discussion.
Now, you are very much for the U.S. going to war with Iraq. If
I'm not a war a person that likes to have war, but what I'm seeing right now is that Saddam has to be stopped. Now, listen to this: the German and French are very proud that you say, well, we could see signs that Saddam is finally cooperating and producing new evidence. Now, the fact that he is producing new evidence tells us that he was lying from yesterday backward. And the only reason he's producing new evidence is because there are military personnel and armada around his country, or around Iraq. Mm-hmm. And that, to me, demonstrates that he does not have the intention to live in peace. Like, let's say, the government in South Africa came to a point, they said, that's it, we want to live in peace with the rest of the world, with the rest of mm-hmm. mankind, and we got to stop our policy, because our policy is not accepted by the rest of the world.
Okay, Mahan, I'm going to put your question to Ivo Dalder, or your comments to him.
No doubt that this is an atrocious regime. I think even the French and the Germans would grant that. The issue before them right now is whether or not disarmament, which is the issue, as opposed to human rights, is going to best be achieved through inspections or through war. The American argument is that we now have tried the disarmament route peacefully for 12 years. It's not working, so we need to go to war. The French and the German argument is, at least the French argument, the German argument is that war is unacceptable under any circumstance, at least one in which the Germans participate. The French argument is, we haven't had sufficient time, we need more time, we need to try to do disarmament peacefully one more time. We can debate whether that's the right or wrong thing, but this is not about human rights abuses in Iraq. That could be a reason why one should go to war. In fact, it may be a good reason to go to war. But that's not the issue that is dividing the United States and its allies right now. The question is the degree to what strategy one pursues in order to effect the disarmament of Iraq. That's the issue in which there is a disagreement. There's a profound disagreement about whether war will have the risks of war are greater than the benefits, where clearly most in Europe happen to believe that the risks are greater than the benefits, and the United States believes the other way around.
So what does this mean for NATO if we could take apart, put aside what might happen in Iraq? What does this mean for NATO? Is this a rift that we have seen in the past few days that cannot be made better at all, or is there still a need for an alliance if there's that kind of division? And people have gone on record this time as voicing their disapproval.
They've gone on record to voice disapproval at this particular moment in time, and we'll have to see how it plays out. We have a very important week coming up with the UN inspectors reporting back to the United Nations, and we will see what they at that point say. We then, if in fact, as I think they may well say, that there is not enough cooperation by the Iraqis, we then have the possibility of a UN resolution that even the French could support, in which case NATO will move very quickly to buttress the defense of Turkey. There will be likely to be a war unless Saddam caves at the last minute, which is always a possibility. The French, I think, will participate in that war. If they vote for it, they're going to participate. They're going to do what they regard as the right thing to do. And at that point, the real question is Germany will be isolated. And an isolated Germany is not a country, is not something that we in history have seen. We have to figure out a way to get Germany back into the fold. It's going to be take some deft diplomacy. I just think that the way you don't do that is by scolding them, by refusing to talk to them, by treating them as if they're little kids, but rather by showing some magnanimity, extending the hand of friendship, and say we want you part of this alliance. That, in fact, has not happened since the beginning of this crisis when the elections were last.
But that is how alliances have been alliances over history.
Alliances, it's like a marriage, but it does take two to tango in this one, just as it does in many other things.
Well, Ivo Dalder, thanks for joining us.
It was my pleasure.
Ivo Dalder is Senior Fellow in Foreign Policy Studies at the Brookings Institution, and under the Clinton administration, he was Director for European Affairs at the National Security Council.